How are you doing?
He asked.
I'm fine. Just can't get up on my fucking feet, that's all.
Jamie's head was swimming with dizziness. His body ached all over, and he felt so tired that it was tempting just to stretch out right there and go to sleep. The canyon was so wide that he could actually see the sunset. The cliffs on the other side were too far away to be visible, tall as they were. He watched the sun for a moment, saw it touch the rocky horizon, felt the shadows of deathly freezing night reaching toward him. Inside his suit, he shuddered, almost like a dog trying to shake off water. He looked down at the tiny stone bear in the fading light. The leather thong holding the miniature arrowhead and the feather had been lovingly tied by his grandfather. An eagle's feather, Jamie thought. Symbol of strength. I could sure use some now. Into his helmet microphone, he said,
I might as well come down. There's nothing I can do up here, and the sun's going down.
Tucking the miniature stone bear back into the pouch on the right leg of his hard suit, Jamie started slowly down the ladder. By the time he had painfully made his way back into the airlock, it was dark outside. Connors was sitting in the heaped sand, his white hard suit coated with the red dust. Jamie tried to sound cheerful.
You look like a snowman playing in a pile of rust.
I feel like a goddamn snowman. In July, Connors grumbled.
Slowly, like two arthritic old men, they shoveled most of the sand outside and then closed the outer hatch.
Gotta clean off the suits, Connors muttered.
We've gotta get you on your feet first, Jamie said.
It seemed like hours of tugging and pushing, but finally Connors was standing again, and they went through the motions of vacuuming the dust off their suits. The suits were still stained rust red, though, as they struggled out of them. The airlock smelled of ozone so heavily that Jamie's eyes burned and watered. Finally, they staggered through the inner hatch and half-collapsed on the midship benches. Both women were up in the cockpit, Joanna with a headset clamped over her thick, dark hair.
Voznesensky wants to talk to you, Joanna called back to them, her voice hoarse, labored.
Ilona muttered,
The Russian pig won't trust a woman with his important messages.
Jamie felt his temper snap.
Jesus Christ, Ilona! Knock off the anti-Russian crap! We're in a bad enough fix without your bullshit!
She smiled languidly at him.
What difference does it make? We are all going to die here no matter what I say, aren't we?
Joanna clutched at her arm.
No, we are not going to die. Jamie won't let us die.
He looked into their faces as he painfully made his way toward them in the cockpit. The illness had changed them. Ilona was no longer the haughty, imperious beauty who flouted old rules. Her cheeks were sunken, her eyes ringed with dark circles. She had a look of near panic in her face. The smell of death was on her. Joanna's eyes were burning, blazing. She still looked like a bedraggled little waif, but now there was something in her eyes that Jamie had never seen before. A strength, an endurance he had not realized was in her. Perhaps Joanna had not known it herself. She focused those eyes on Jamie, urgent, demanding.
No, I won't let us die, Jamie said in a half-whisper.
He added silently, not without a fight, at least. A growing feeling of helplessness was beginning to overwhelm Dr. Lee.
Kaliningrad insists that a rescue flight is out of the question, he said.
The expedition commander wanted to stand and pace, wanted to work off the nervous energy sizzling inside him, but in the low-ceilinged confines of the command module, he had to content himself with sitting in one of the narrow padded chairs with his knees poking up ridiculously, clenching and unclenching his fists as he spoke.
But they're stuck down there, Bert Klein said.
Lee shook his head. Kaliningrad says the last lander is to be used only in the direst emergency.
The fact that four of our people are in danger of dying is not a dire emergency? Asked Leonid Tolbukhin sourly.
The cosmonaut and astronaut had quickly volunteered to pilot the expedition's last remaining landing vehicle to the canyon to rescue the four stranded in the rover.
We could sit her down within 50 yards of the rover, Klein said confidently, and then bring them straight back here. Nothing to it.
A piece of cake, Tolbukhin confirmed, the British idiom sounding strange and deliberate in his deep Russian voice.
Kaliningrad says no. You two are the only pilots left here in orbit.
Bring Ivchenko and Zeman back here, Tolbukhin suggested. Then Bert and I can go to the canyon.
Sure, Klein said. You'll still have two LAVs and four pilots at the dome. That'll be plenty to bring the others back when the time comes.
Lee's face was a picture of misery.
Ivchenko and Zeman cannot return here without Yang. We cannot leave both our doctors at the dome. What good would it do to bring the Traverse team up here if there is no physician here to treat them?
Tolbukhin nodded reluctantly. There is something more, Lee told them. The medical staff at Kaliningrad has brought up the question of quarantine.
Quarantine?
Lee felt miserable as he said.
Since we do not know what it is infecting the ground team, they fear that whatever it is might infect us here in orbit if we return the ground team here.
Holy shit, Klein muttered. They want us to leave them down there?
Tolbukhin grasped the larger implication.
That means they will not allow us to return to Earth if we have not found a source of the disease.
Yes, admitted Lee. We ourselves might be quarantined in Earth orbit.
If we live long enough to get back that far, the Russian said.
The alternative is to leave the ground team and return to Earth without them.
That'd kill them, Klein snapped.
Yes, but to rescue them and bring them back up to orbit with us might kill us all.
For long moments, neither the astronaut nor the cosmonaut spoke a word. Finally, Klein said,
Well, you've got to do something.
Lee knew he was right. The weight of responsibility was squarely on his shoulders. Let the four in the rover die, or risk the lives of everyone, including those in orbit, by allowing the last of their pilots to ride to the rescue on the last of the landing ascent vehicles. Abandon the ground team altogether, or risk catching their disease and killing everyone. Lee felt the weight of 24 lives on him, the weight of 2 worlds. When the last of the physicals was finished, Tony Reed asked Yang Mei-Lin,
What do you expect to find?
She shot him a sharp glance from the chair on which she sat.
The cause of this epidemic.
Reed had barely budged from the corner of the infirmary where he had watched her examine all the people in the dome. Now he made a puzzled shrug.
Voznesensky thinks it might be Martian dust that we're inhaling, he said.
Yang's almond eyes watched him unblinkingly from beneath her straight bangs.
Do you believe that?
No, I don't.
We've tested the air here in the dome. It's cleaner than the air in London, by far.
She got up from the chair, a tiny Chinese woman with a nondescript figure and an utterly forgettable, round, flat-featured face, except for those eyes. Reed thought they looked at him accusingly.
Why not? Why shouldn't she blame me for this calamity? It is my fault, my responsibility. I was put here to protect the health of these men and women.
Some protector.
Well, he asked, what do you think?
She shook her head slightly. I cannot tell. All the data from the tests we have just done are being analyzed by the medical computer aboard Mars 2. Until we get its results, I cannot go further.
Reed gave an exasperated sigh.
It won't do any good, you know. The first thing I did when they started coming down with this malady was to run all the medical records through the computer diagnostic program. It just burped out nonsense.
Perhaps now, with more data,
I doubt it. The computer can only tell you what it already knows, and we're facing something new and unprecedented here.
Perhaps not. It may be something ordinary but unexpected. That is the great strength of the computer. It is not clouded by human expectations or emotions. It analyzes all the symptoms and reports which medical conditions fit the data.
Yes, Reed sniffed, feeling real anger surging up inside him. I'll tell you what the damned computer will give us. It will suggest that the malady might be a variation of influenza, which it isn't, because we found no influenza viruses in the blood workups. Or malaria, which is ridiculous because the nearest mosquito is 200 million kilometers from here. Or radiation poisoning, which it can't be because the dosimeters show that every member of the team is well within tolerable limits. Or a vitamin deficiency, which is ludicrous because I see to it that everyone takes their bloody vitamin supplements.
Yang said,